You're probably accusing me and my dad of collusion, of getting together and comparing notes, but I assure you we did not. Title of my message is Fighting the Division Within. I'd like to start in the beginning, when it all started. Of course, we all know the story of creation. Yahweh created everything in 7 days, and on the sixth day, Yahweh created Adam and Eve. And in Genesis 1, verse 27, it says that man and woman were made in Yahweh's image. I don't think that this is just physical. You know, it talks in the Bible about the strong arm of Yahweh, talks about him speaking and stuff. But I think this goes a lot more beyond just the physical, especially since in John, In John 4, verse 24, it says that Yahweh is spirit. So I think this is more to deal with Yahweh's actual character, who he is, what he represented as, who Yahweh is. If you do some comparisons between Yahweh and us, now I'm not saying that we're Yahweh, I'm not even close. What I am saying is that we do have some characteristics that have been given to us because we were made in Yahweh's likeness. For instance, creativity. There is no other creature on the planet that can create like us. I mean, you have beavers that can build dams and stuff, and the one on the screen is, it's pretty nice for them. This is their how they live and stuff. But there's nothing compared to something like this. I can't remember the name of this, but it's like the tallest building in the world. But then again, too, it's nothing compared to this, the galaxy. So you can see a creativity that's within. You know, beavers, they create, but it's more of instinct. They don't really actually design new forms of dams. They just create the same ones over and over again. Whereas us, we can create, Ryan pretty much built this whole building and everyone else. So we have that ability to create. Rational thinking. Yahweh, of course, is rational thinking. The physical laws of the universe dictate that there has to be some sort of mind behind it. We have reasoning as well. Well, I hope we have reasoning. Some people, I would dispute that. Animals do not have this. You know, you can't have a discussion with an animal. And I mean, they're as durable as they are. They're just not on the same plane as us. Yahweh even encourages us to have reasoning. Oops, I guess I did have that slide in there. In Isaiah 1, verse 18, he says, "Come now, let us reason together." So he wants us to think. Emotions. Yahweh has emotions. How many times in the book of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, did Yahweh get angry with Israel? You know, Yahweh has emotions. But then, too, he's also merciful and compassionate. How many times has he shown mercy to us? And we have emotions as well. The thing that I like to focus more upon than these is Yahweh's singularity of thought and action. If you think about who Yahweh is not divided in anything he does. He doesn't change. Like it says in Malachi 3, verse 6, he's not one person today, and then tomorrow he's something totally different. Yahweh is Yahweh. He is who he is. He does not change. Yahweh is good. Yahweh can only do good. According to James 1, verse 17, every good gift, every perfect gift is from above. And it comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variableness. And that's very important, no variableness. A variable is something that can change. There is no variableness, neither shadow or of turning. Now, this doesn't mean that Yahweh is ignorant of evil. That's just silly. Yahweh is all-knowing. For him to not know of evil is silly. It's just that everything that Yahweh does is righteous and good. There is nothing that he does that is wrong, because he is good. He is the epitome of good. He is the epitome of righteousness. Now, if we follow the same logical path, that if Adam and Eve were made in Yahweh's image, then you would think that they would have gotten some of this singularity of thought too. You think of like whenever they were in the Garden of Eden, they only were accounted as unrighteous after the fall, which I'll get to that. Before that, all that they did was good. They had no idea this concept of evil. Everything that they did was right. Which leads us to, of course, the fall of man in Genesis 3. We all know this story. Satan deceived them, and he convinced them to eat of the tree of tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, it's very important to understand this tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So it's two things. Before this, they were like Yahweh in the singularity of thought. And until the fall, all they did was good. But after this, they had knowledge of good and evil. It created a dichotomy within them. It created division within man. It didn't mean that they didn't have the choice. It's not like they were ignorant and couldn't make choices. But they chose wrong. And because of that wrong choice that they made, the goodness that they had was mixed with evil and sin. It is an analogy if you think of light as being good and you think of darkness as being sin. They had both a mixture of light and dark mixed together, which is kind of silly to think if you think about it, because if there's a light that shines in a dark place, automatically the darkness goes away. So having this darkness and having this light in the same place is not a natural phenomenon. And it also took away their unity with Yahweh and separated them from Yahweh. In 1 John 1, verse 5 through 6, it says, "This then is the message which we have heard of him, and I declare unto you that Elohim is light, and in him is no darkness at all. If we say we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth." Yahweh could not be with us because of this very fact, because of the darkness that we had that was put within Adam and Eve at this time. Sin, if you think about it, sin kind of infected them. I was trying to think of the best word for this, and the best word I could think of was an infection. Something like a disease that just destroys within. It created this struggle between good and evil, between good and light, or good and darkness. And because of this, you know, Adam and Eve had children, and this sin was passed down to their children and their children's children all the way down to us. And, you know, there's a thought of like original sin, that everything that we, all the sin that we have is attributed back to Adam. But I think there's almost a combination of two, that we have our own innate sin that we have, but there's also that sin that's passed down to all of us. I mean, think about it. If everything was just based upon environment of bad behavior, then if you lived on a, if let's say that you lost all your memory, you lived on a deserted island, then theoretically you could do no wrong because you lived on, you know, there's no other people to distort your thinking. But then again, you could still worship the sun, and you could still become an idolater. It's not just based upon your environment. You know, I had and have good parents when I was growing up. I was very stubborn as a child. Ask my parents. They'll say my one flaw is a stubbornness. But, you know, I didn't observe that as a child. I wasn't 2 years old and like looking at it and was like, oh, okay, that's what stubbornness is. I think I'll be stubborn. No, I was stubborn. It was born within me, that weakness. And that's the condition that each of us has. Is we're not all completely evil and terrible, but we all have the evil that is within us that resides, that darkness. This is our condition in James 3, verse 7 through 12. And, you know, when you read through this, this is such truth of what we deal with. Every kind of beast, of birds and serpents, and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath tamed of mankind, but the tongue no man can tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we Elohim, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of Elohim. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. And doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh? James is using an analogy of it's impossible to have one thing and the other at the same time. You can't have a fountain that's shooting out sweet and also bitter water. But this is what happens within us. We have this. We have this. The sweetness within, but we also have this bitter that also resides. And even if we don't act upon these things, we still have these thoughts sometimes. And this is just the fight that we all have. So as I've gotten that out of the way, I'd like to discuss how to fight this division within. There are some ways to fight this sinful nature. You know, Yahweh does not leave us unequipped. He's very merciful and kind to us and gives us some weapons to use. First thing I believe that we need to recognize is that we are sinners. I think that's the first step. You know, you can't fix anything unless you know that there's a problem. You know, it's hard to fix a mechanical problem unless you realize that there's some sort of grinding sound. Or even going to the doctor. You know, you don't just go to the doctor because he's your friend. You know, you feel like there's something wrong. You have to realize that there's something wrong before you realize that you have to be fixed. And each of us needs to be fixed. Each of us has a fault, has a problem. And that includes me too. I'm not just pointing fingers at everybody. I have plenty of faults. In Romans 3, verse 23, it says, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of Elohim." And also 1 John 1, verse 8 through 10. "If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins, and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us." We are all sinners. Christians, Muslims, everybody is a sinner. Some people are ignorant of their sin. Some people don't realize that they sin. You know, they don't understand Yahweh's commandments. But, you know, even us, those who know a little bit better than most, we can't think that maybe we're better than someone else in this. Everyone is equal in this playing field. Everyone is a sinner. You're born with sin, and each of us makes mistakes. This is a good thing because it does keep us humble. You know, Yahweh can't work with us unless we're humble. You know, all throughout the scriptures, he talks about humility being such a great quality to have. This first step is an emptying process. You know, it takes us, you know, a lot of times, mostly throughout the day, the first thing we think of is ourselves. We think a lot of ourselves. There was some sort of statistic that recorded telephone calls. And the one word that was used the most in telephone calls is the word "I." You know, a lot of times, you know, you look at someone else and you're thinking, oh, they're looking at me and they're thinking about me. But in reality, they're thinking more about themselves. So this first process stops us thinking about ourselves and how great we are, because we really aren't. It's an emptying process to show us who we really are. Yahweh wants to help us, though. But like I said, he can only help us if we are humble. He can't work with something that's arrogant. The arrogant he uses as well, but Pharaoh is arrogant, and he used him for that purpose. We need to recognize that humility is what we need. So the second thing after we realize that we have a need, that we need to humble ourselves, is we need to focus on the right things. And this is a filling up process. We've emptied ourselves, now we want to fill ourselves up with something. In Philippians 4, verse 8, it says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things." To do what is right, you have to know what is right. It makes sense. You can't do anything unless you have knowledge to do that action. And you have to think about them. It's not just about knowing them, but thinking about it, pondering it, letting it sink into your life. It means exercising our mind in the Bible. You know, the Bible is the greatest book ever written. Even all the great classics, all the great books out there, the reason why they're so good is because they get principles from the Bible. Every great book gets principles out of here. The problem is that the world is pushing the Bible out. You know, you see more and more schools or the government or whoever pushing these teachings out, and it is becoming more and more corrupt because of that. And the more and more it's pushed out, the more corrupt it's going to become, because there are no right principles to guide it. But we must fight this, and we must do the opposite and focus more upon Yahweh's words instead of less. There are lots of distractions in this world. We have jobs, we've got things that we do, or hobbies. There's always going to be distractions in the world. But it's important to take care of the most important things as well. We can still make time, you know, just reading your Bible a few minutes a day. I mean, everybody's busy. We all have things that we have to do. But reading it a little bit every day makes it a habit. You know, just a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. And you don't need to read a ton all the time and devote your time to study for hours and hours. Just a little bit every day is going to help you out in the long run. And then, like I said, don't just read the scriptures and then that's it. Actively think about it. Reading is not a passive activity. It's an active activity. Think about what you're reading. Put yourself in their shoes. Apply it to yourself. Gain information through their experiences. You know, there's different ways of learning. The best way to learn is you can learn that the stove is hot by putting your hand on the stove, or you can learn the stove is hot by seeing your brother put their hand in the stove and see them burn their hand. It's much better to see your sibling put their hand on the stove and learn. Not that you want to tell your sibling to do that, but it's better to learn through others' experiences because there's less pain. Doing what is right is two things. It's reactionary, and it's also proactive. Reactionary is whenever we're given a situation and we have to react to it. For instance, in the next few months, we'll be given the opportunity to tell people how we don't keep Christmas and Halloween. This is a reactionary thing because you have to react to what's happening. Proactive is better. It's seeking out good things. It's filling yourself with good things. And the more proactive you become in thinking about good things, the better your reaction is going to become. To become great, you have to look at greatness. You have to surround yourself with it. You know, learn from the greatness of Joshua and the lessons that he has, but also learn from the tragedy of Solomon and see how his life went and how you could not go in that direction. And also look at Joshua. You know, one of the purposes of Joshua's coming was to show us righteousness and greatness. And also part of this with filling ourselves up, we want to make sure that we're not filling ourselves up with garbage. You know, there's a saying, garbage in, garbage out. Who we are is based upon a few things. One is just our general disposition. You know, I'm an introvert by nature. I can be more extrovert, but it's very uncomfortable for me. This is very uncomfortable, standing up here. I'll admit it. Amanda's warming my hands up before the sermon because I've got no blood in my hands and my feet right now. You know, this is who I am. And we all have our own general dispositions as well. But we're also what we listen to. We're also what we read. We also are what we watch. And we're also who we hang around with. These also make us who we are. So we need to choose well what we do with this. You know, is the stuff that I'm listening to, is this something that's building me up? Is this something that's appropriate? Are the things that I'm reading or watching on television, is this something that, you know, I feel better after I'm done, or I just feel like I need to take a bath? You know, choose well, because our actions in these things are going to lead us one way or the other. And the last thing I like to talk about in fighting this division within is remembering Yahweh and Yahshua's love for us. I don't know if anyone's ever watched the movie The Passion. It's a great movie. I know some haven't. It's a really tough movie to watch. It's tough. I always get emotional every time I watch it. It's just, man. But, you know, if you haven't, you still know the story, you know, of Yahshua's death. But seeing what Yahshua did and knowing what Yahweh allowed for us to happen. Oops, I think I pressed the button. Doesn't it touch you somehow? It just makes you want to be better. You see what he did for us, and you're like, man, I could, you know, I wish I didn't do that before. I wish I could become better, you know. It refreshes your spirit, and it makes you want to become a better person. You know, John 3, verse 16, you got to see it beforehand. For Yahweh so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. You know, he gave Yahshua for us because he loved us. I can't imagine the amount of pain he must have gone through to have to do this for us. And, you know, Paul says that a righteous man will do good for someone that's righteous. But Yahweh did this righteous act for us sinners. So this is what love is. And because of this love, for me at least, it fills me with love. It makes me want to love others more. You know, it makes me want to remember my blessings, the things that I have, to remember that I am loved, and to remember that I am cared for, and everyone as well. You know, to remember your blessings, remember that you are loved, and remember that each one of you is cared for, that Yahweh loves every one of us. And like I said, this increases our love. It increases because we know of this love that is for us, because we are undeserving of this love. It increases our love for others, for Yahweh. And whenever this kind of love is around, it just destroys the evil that's within. You know, it is like a bright light that shines into darkness. The darkness disappears. It is completely gone. Now, we'll still have that within us. It's not going to be completely eliminated, but there's going to be a lot more light than there is going to be darkness. I guarantee it. It'll increase our love of Yahweh, desiring even more to serve Him, and desiring even more to go back to His Word and see what He says, and desiring to know what we can to show Him our love. And it increases our love for others, because when we know that Yahweh loves us, we want to help, we want to love other people. In conclusion, we're always going to have this sinful nature. There's nothing that we can do in this life that is going to take all of that sin away from us. The only way that's going to be taken away is when we're changed, whenever we are resurrected and are changed in the likeness of Yahshua. So until that time, we have to fight. We have to do something about it. We can't just let things passively go by. We have to actively work, and we have to do our part. You know, Yahweh gives us some tools to do this. And it takes an everyday event. Every day we have to be fighting for this. There's a book called The Slight Edge, and I only thought of this morning to put this in, so I don't have a really cool slide to put in. But over time, there's a gradual either up or down. You either, a little bit over time, you happen to go either up doing the right things, or over time you happen to go down. And the more you do things, the faster things go up. In the long term, it's not just a straight line. It actually curves straight up. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we want to go straight up? Do we want to go curving upwards and do the right things every day and, you know, fight this good fight? Or do we want to go down into the darkness? There's a really good story that I like. I have it on the screen for you because I thought this wolf was really cool. It's an Native American Cherokee story called The Two Wolves. One evening, an old Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed." To starve out this sinful nature, we need to feed ourselves humility. We need to constantly reminding ourselves of our need for Yahweh. We need to feed ourselves right things, and also in the contrast, to not feed us the bad things. And we need to feed ourselves love, to constantly remind ourselves of the love that Yahweh has, and to give this love back to others. And with these things, it will help us to fight our sinful nature within. May Yahweh bless. Amen.